I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In the city again. This truly is the worst idea of all time.
Hello and welcome to episode 7 of our watch along series of the Sex and the City reboot. And just like that, episode 7 is called Sex and the Widow, a delightful play on words on the original title of the show. I am Guy Montgomery. I am sat next to Tim Batt.
Hi, everybody.
And we are joined by special guest.
Self-proclaimed Miranda.
Self-proclaimed Miranda, news to me. Do you know, I've always thought of myself as a bit of a Miranda.
Really?
Since we watched the movies. Chris Parker.
Hi, everyone. I've actually considered myself more of a Carrie.
Oh,
in the sense
recently?
That I identify with having a lead character.
Yes.
Complex.
Yes, of
in
course.
My own life.
Well, it's not a complex. In your own life, Chris,
you are the lead.
You
character.
Are the lead character.
And a Carrie would say that.
Yes.
Carrie would identify it out loud to everybody without acknowledledging that other people were the star of
and the masses
lives.
Would read it and they'd think, she's right. Carrie is the main character.
It's an honor to be here. Can I just say that first and foremost? I watched the episode. Watching this series has been the highlight of the end of my last year and the beginning of this year. Every day, every week when it drops on a Thursday, I get a flutter in my heart.
Truly.
Truly. I can say without a slither of like irony, I'm truly loving the series.
And was that the case from the start? Like from episode one?
Yeah.
Big Carks it on a Peloton and you're like, I'm in.
I was weeping by episode two. And so many people hate it. So many people hate it. And I just love what it is.
Mm.
It's like a big bag of sour cream and chives chips or something. You know, you just like, it's too much.
Yeah.
But it's just so revoltingly good. And I love it. And, you know, by the end of the hour, your tongue's burnt off. You know, all the artificial flavors taken over. But I'm loving it.
You are who the show is for. You're engaging with it exactly how they'd hope.
Yeah, because I am sick of critiquing things on a level that they don't deserve to be critiqued.
But they're not asking to be criticized.
Exactly.
On.
I'm like, they know exactly what they're giving us, which is a pile of shit. And they're giving, and it's so good.
Okay, Chris, I don't think that they think they're giving us a pile
of
shit.
Well, no, there's levels to it. And I think on one level, you're absolutely right. I think Mattress Parklet King and HBO are fully aware of what they're doing here. And it's bit like, how do you measure success for a project like this? Is it purely money? Probably, right?
I think if we're talking about it, they're happy.
Yeah.
100%.
People are watching this. I haven't seen stats. This is just a vibration I'm picking up in the world. People are watching the show. People are consuming it.
People,
and they're still on board. And I'm on board. Can I say that about this episode?
That's new.
I'm now very on board.
I feel like you've been dragging your heels through this entire season.
I know.
It's a pleasure to be able to do this podcast as well, in terms of the fact that we, one, didn't have to watch straight porn together,
yes,
and two, just the kind of buoyancy that you both have, knowing that you're watching a fresh ep,
it's
I love
so
it.
Good.
Yeah. The feeling I've had this season is one of release. It's one of joy and jubilation, and I've been like traveling down there and just like that rabbit hole with more caution, I would say, than you, who's throwing themselves into it with pure pleasure, with reckless abandon.
Yeah.
But I have come to enjoy the show, I think. And
you
almost,
wait,
I feel
you see the original series.
Almost, I don't believe that's canon. I almost, interestingly, I feel like I was treating it with a real gravitas in more recent episodes. Like the last two, I've really been like, you know, engaging with it as in a way that you've been criticizing, which is like on a level which is higher than the show's asking for. And in this episode, I thought, this is really silly. This is a really fucking silly show. And it was a joy to watch it with that top of mind.
Yeah.
I like to sort of, this is how I watch it. I like to pop my laptop up, lie on my bed. I'm sort of like in fetal position. You know, there's a bag of chips or something to drink at the same time. And I sort of go on my phone at the same time. I pay little to no attention. And then I sort of, the story washes over me. And every now and then I pause when certain characters are speaking because it gets too much for me. And then I'll play again after a few moments of just like letting it sink in. And then I'll go like, oh, nice clothes. Oh, what a weird shirt. Oh, odd bag.
Yeah.
I like that lamp. And that's kind of it. That's my experience.
Can I just ask as well, when you say a character gets too much for you and that's when you have to pause, is it like smugness of dialogue? Is it too melodramatic a moment? It is, or are you like so on board that things are, because this has some real melodramatic elements and sad stuff happens and big things happens, and are you so taken in with the emotion that you need to just rest with it for a bit?
No. There's one character in particular, I'm sure we all know who the character is, and I am worried about publicly declaring my hatred of Shay Diaz. Only for this reason. I feel like Shay Diaz has been put in this show purposefully as a weapon by the creators of the show to be like, oh, I get it. Sorry. Sex and the City was cancelled because it was problematic. We will give you the most woke, like, sort of morally right character we can, and we are going to make you hate them. As a way for us to be like challenged by our own values, to be like, get rid of all this kind of like virtue signaling. We just want trash characters. And they're like, see, we knew it. You know, like it's like they're playing us at our own game. And I feel like the only way that we can truly get rid of Shay Diaz is by liking them.
This is some five-dimensional chess being played by the producers of And Just Like That.
Don't you think?
I do. And you have articulated it far better, something that I tried to voice in an earlier episode, which is like, you know, what is the, what's on the dartboard of like things that we need to keep Twitter happy with? And we'll put it all into one character quite haphazardly. And they'll just sort of like permeate the show. But I have actually, you know, I've grown to really like Shay.
Same.
I can't stand Shay.
I love Shay and I love their comedy.
You feel attacked by their comedy.
Yeah, I think
I'm pointing at Guy.
The reason that I take huge issue with Shay is that Shay is billed as this incredible world-changing comedian, and I can't.
Do you know what it is? It's this. It's that the things that, so the opposite to love is not hate, it is indifference. And the reason why you hate this character is because they are so close to the thing that you love and you do, and your heroes are in this art form doing it in a such similar way, but it is just different enough for you, the portrayal of stand-up comedy in the show through the vehicle of Shay, that it has fallen into an uncanny valley for you, and you are revolted by how close but not quite right it is.
I think there's truth in there. I cannot stand the reverence with which everyone treats what is objectively a bad comic. Shay's pretty good on the podcast. I'll give them that. X, Y, and Me is not a podcast I would listen to, but as a host,
that's well produced.
It's well produced. The dynamic with Bobby Lee, what they try to get out of Carrie, I'm all for that. But also, they are morally questionable. Their treatment of Miranda, even though Miranda's asking for way more from Shay than is reasonable or what Shay will give.
Yes.
Miranda is
not treated with any tenderness or care, I would say, by Shay.
No.
And on a journey that's quite fraught for her at the moment.
You know, this is every relationship in the world. What business of it is Shay's? Shay is just trying to suck and fuck whoever they like.
And I guess that's kind of what I like about the character is, and they say explicitly in this episode, like, say what you want, that's a turn on. And I like that attitude of just, hey, you can't be worried about everyone all the time. Everyone's got to kind of like stand on their feet a little bit.
You go ahead, Chris, and then I have a very important point to make about also I think why I don't like Shay.
No, go, you go.
Another reason I don't like Shay is because they are trampling on the people's prince that is Steve. They have like reduced one of the great characters in my experience of Sex and the City to, as you aptly put while we watched this episode, Tim, Mr. Magoo. They have removed all of his agency and just made him this aged, stupid fuck who like was, I feel like I've watched Steve have sex. And the man knows how, he's a fucking machine.
Steve is so hot. And he's kept so well.
Yeah.
Like, he's so hot in this series. And he is like a buffoon. He's like 90 years old, completely deaf, can't work his way around a market that he's been to every week for his whole life and living in New York.
He's lost all of his self-confidence. He's asking for permission to put lids on food containers in his own kitchen to put in the fridge.
This guy ran a bar. He's a small business owner. He's been in the rough and tumble of the New York City economy.
He was the mayor of New York City.
What happened to him? What happened to that marriage? It's so sad because I feel like the takeaway of Sex and the City, and Just Like That, sorry, is like you're never going to end up happy.
Well,
it's kind of where we're at.
Charlotte is the happily ever after, which I think is kind of apt because that's always what she was gunning for, right?
She's the most delusional and she's the most... who's out of control, and she's the one whose life I would be the most scared to live.
Well, it's interesting because there's a direct, like, I agree that Charlotte is the most delusional character, which marries perfectly to the fact that Charlotte is the most controlling in terms of trying to, you know, control how she's perceived and how other people around her represent her. And if that's how you're going to live your life, is exclusively through the lens of how other people are looking at you, of course you're going to be fucking delusional because you're not doing anything on your own terms. Every decision she makes is based on what people think of her.
I can't believe she ran an art gallery. Like, I can't believe it is the same woman.
Yeah.
Who's like playing tennis with her husband and kind of getting in a strop is this, and like kind of delivering this very sort of first wave, like sort of mansplaining Instagram infographic lesson to her husband.
It's
the same woman that ran an art gallery that was like all about empowering like female sexuality.
And before we pile on her too hard, she did have the best line and line read of the entire episode where she said, "I will not apologize for playing good tennis. You are driving me fucking crazy."
Yeah, it was awesome.
That was sick.
It was so good.
This is where I'm like, if I was looking at this show beyond it being a pile of steaming shit, the part of me that's like, this could be amazing, is this show that looks at life with your friends in your 50s. Like, that's heaven to me. I'm desperate to see that. I'm desperate to watch a show about, like, when you get to a certain point and your friend dies of just old age and what that means to you.
Yeah.
But it's like none of them have let the death of Big affect them. They're all just...
Carrie,
you're right. Apart from Carrie, like, it's not acknowledged by anyone else that it's happened.
And we only know it because she's always like, my husband died.
She's always using it to one-up someone. It's never like, I'm having a low day today or anything like that. It's always someone will say something going wrong in their life and she's like, well, I'm a widow, so I win.
Yeah.
Like, she literally says, I still win to Charlotte at one point.
At every turn. It's...
And the weird thing is Miranda and her having a discussion, this conversation, this episode about Miranda's sex life and about how it's sort of dead and it needs to be resuscitated. And there's a slight part of me that's wondering, like, would you feel uncomfortable having this conversation with your friend whose husband has just, well, not just died, but died that year, to be using terminology, be like, my sex life is non-responsive. It's just like, it feels...
That's all beautifully constructed for Carrie to say, well, my sex life actually is dead. My husband is dead.
He's buried in a coffin under the ground.
What I cracked on to in this episode, which I don't know, maybe I said this when we were doing the movies or something, but every character is written with the same voice and then just one cartoonish element changed. Like, they went back to the thing of making Runkle just like have not a whole lot of lines in this episode, but half of them reference the fact that he's Jewish.
His first line is, hi, I'm Jewish.
Yeah. It's like he's making some toast. And Charlotte's like, did you get hungry? He's like, yeah, I found like some nosh. It's like, okay. It's cool. Yeah.
This episode, it felt more fun and frivolous because the pacing was totally different. The first half of it, they crammed so many different story dynamics, and This is something Olivia observed in our last episode, which is that there is inconsistency in like how stories are treated, and the timeline is very confusing. Like when you're talking about when Big died, relative to this episode, when do you think Big did die?
Okay, so I need to sort of think about this a little bit because she had a sore hip.
Yes.
Then she healed from the hip and we saw her in her heels, and it took a while. That took 3 months.
That did take 3 months.
And then this episode began with what felt like 10 years passing in a window. We saw every season. We saw autumn, winter.
Yeah, we saw
beginning of spring.
That's right. So and that's the song months. Said spring has come.
Exactly.
Because if you can't pick up on the cues,
they'll tell you.
Yeah. I'm going to say 6 months since Big died, roughly, which is honestly not a long time since the love of your life died on a bike.
Yeah, you'd be a mess. You'd still be a mess after 6 months. Your friends would at least, like, you know, acknowledge it out loud to you that it's happened.
It's got to be longer than 6 months.
I've just got to put a stake in the ground for something you said earlier, Chris. I was, it's sort of one of those things where it's like, I know what you guys are doing, but you still got me anyway. I was fully with Charlotte of that spiel that she gave Harry about the fact that he, like, it was like a Seinfeld turn in the episode where it's like, we're just going to dig our heels into a tiny point and explore it from multiple angles of whether Charlotte being aggressive on the tennis court, presumably at, you know, sort of the insistence or suggestion of Harry saying, you got to go for the ball because they both missed a shot. And then she went and took Harry out when she was going for a shot and won the match. I don't know tennis.
Yeah, did. She won the match.
But Harry got very hurt because he got bowled over by it and she didn't say sorry. And you know what? I'm with Charlotte on this one. Women are always having to apologize. It's a cool zone.
I'm on Charlotte's side. I just think the way it was phrased, like the articulation of that
the mansplain speech
was like, she did that speech 10 years ago. I'm so surprised that she's delivering it now. And like the way she's blindly navigating her child's gender exploration is like so clumsy and uncomfortable in a way that I'm like, this is the big thing. These characters are not written like they've lived in New York their whole lives.
Absolutely. This is what I keep coming back to with Miranda putting her foot in her mouth with her black law professor. It's like, you fucking live in New York. First of all, you live in the year 2020-ish, one, two. Secondly, you're in New York City. What is going on here? Did you hit your head?
Something happened in the movies where they became so rich. The women became so rich. You know, they're not that rich. I mean, they're quite rich in the original series.
Is Carrie broke in the series because she's a writer? Like, did they sort of play with that at all? Or is she okay?
No, she's just like, lives this very chic bohemian life.
She's
got a small, charming apartment and, you know, she's not moving because she doesn't want to, like, lose her rent. And she spent all her money on designer shoes and she should really rein that back. Okay. That's kind of her energy the whole time. Loves a cocktail.
Okay.
Very social. But she's, like, got expendable income. She's a writer. She's got some successful books.
You think between the series, which I just cannot emphasize enough, is not canon, and just like that. There was the assumed wealth or understood wealth of the characters became so great that it means that the show and movies exist in a vacuum of like non-reality.
Yes.
Just where they actually don't brush up against ordinary civilization or what the world is doing.
The movies changed it for all time. Like the money, I guess, was thrown at the series.
The timing for me is so hilarious because it was the first movie that came out in 2008.
Yes.
So literally, the global financial crisis happened, the markets melted down, and America gained a class consciousness that it hasn't seen for decades of finally recognizing that all of their wealth was going to the very top and everyone was getting fucking boned. And Mattress Pike King was like, I've got an answer for this. We'll make them hyper wealthy and send them around the world to shit on other cultures while wearing really beautiful dresses. And it's like, there is something so full circle awful about that it's enjoyable. It is Days of Our Lives, you know? It's like, it is a fool's errand to critically assess a daytime soap opera. And while this isn't that, it's not a million miles away from the energy.
But it's it, it's more self-serious. They are successfully or unsuccessfully trying to elevate their standing amongst the world. Like, it's still reaching to be some version of prestige television. They're still...
Okay, what is this series trying to be? Like, what's the series that's actually doing it? What is the series aspiring to be?
I think... I don't watch enough TV to know what the series is aspiring to be, but what if this show wanted to achieve what it's trying to do, it would have to exist with brand new intellectual property and characters who haven't lived like through
the Brady spinoff.
That's what I was thinking is in the last episode when Charlotte was talking to Rock and Lily in their room, and then. They went off to school. I thought it would be great to go to school.
Oh,
it would be great to go to school with these characters and actually kick around like in the, you know, with the group of teenagers who are living beneath this series of completely fucking insane parents, which I guess is like what, a Euphoria or something?
Grounded Riverdale.
Almost Gossip Girl.
Yeah. But Gossip Girl fell into the same trap that this did, which is like, these shows were delightful because they existed separate from reality, and they didn't bother to try and address any of the gritty, challenging details of a normal life. And Gossip Girl rebooted and tried to become progressive, and they tried to actually incorporate a lot of stuff that would have been, you know, understandable criticism of the original Gossip Girl. But the fact that the original Gossip Girl was pure trash is what made it so good. And the fact that Sex and the City... like, just followed around these four women in their, like, self-interested pursuit of their own lives, which is a totally reasonable way for them to live their life, made it good. And now when they're trying to, introduce intersectionality in other parts, it's when it becomes a bit of a mess.
What I would love from this show, actually, is because they're so accountable to their past, these characters, in a way. Like, they existed in a time before social media, but yet we have this record of them and their past behavior that we can actually sort of hold them accountable to who they previously were in a way that's very, like, common, I think going to be very common in our lives as well. And as they've gotten older and more successful and married and got kids, they've become really, really wealthy. They're essentially now, they were these amazing, like, you know, publicist and a gallerist and a cutting-edge writer, and now they're the Real Housewives of New York.
Yeah.
And what would be incredible is if there's a moment in the series, this is what they should have done, that they realize they've lost touch and they're all incredibly wealthy, and then they just try and get back to who they originally were, but not by, you know, woking themselves up. But just in a way where they're like, oh, we've absolutely lost touch with who we are.
Do you feel like Miranda is sort of doing that in the series? I feel especially early on in the season.
It was an action point. It was motivation for her to do something.
Like, literally, she was going back to school, you know, and all the sort of two layers of metaphor that is.
I think there was a accountability that Miranda was like, I need it. That made sense for that character as a lawyer to be like, I actually don't want to just be suing rich people. I want to be like trying to make a difference. I think the character that is going on the best journey currently is Carrie. I love that she's doing this massive journey back to original Carrie in a way.
Yeah.
Like, there's, I got
you goosebumps. Got good, yeah, you did. I'll bet you did.
When her appealed and she wore that amazing sparkly dress and her legs looked incredible and she was in her heels in her apartment and it was like, she's like, she was.
Do you mean after she did the 3-month voiceover? She said, and just like that, it was 3 months later and I was in heels again. You got goosebumps.
I got goosebumps.
Because incredible. I wish.
Because she was in that big white apartment that beeped. And you were like, I was afraid that she was going to, I was genuinely afraid they were going to move her in there. And she made this choice to kind of go back
but
to.
You respected that storytelling.
Yes.
You respected dropping her in and
Guy,
taking her out.
I'm enjoying the series. Yeah, I said it right up top. I'm loving it.
Well, while we're speaking of enjoyment, I do want to say one thing before I forget is that this is the first episode. I didn't realize it until you mentioned the word publicist before. I didn't even think of Samantha.
Well, it's because this is the first time they haven't mentioned her.
Have the opposite feeling. This is the first episode I missed Samantha.
What situation did you want to see her in?
Okay. Critically, they're at this sort of weird fundraising event for the school, and Carrie is reciting the events of her date, which was like this incredible double spew moment that was just like heaven to me, like such a great choice from the writers just to like Because Carrie...
Do you want to give us the full context of that? We haven't actually talked about what happens in the ep.
Okay, all right. Just put me to work. Okay, so... Carrie, three months has passed. We saw the seasons change in the window. She writes a full book, which is truly inspiring stuff. And her book publisher is like, the book is amazing. It's really, really sad. It needs a glimmer of hope. And the book publisher is this amazing woman that, honestly, the performance really rings true to me. Like, I've met these women in my life. She loves caffeine. She loves a cappuccino. She's sort of spiraling in a way that feels almost too much. And she's very personable in a way that I feel like you wouldn't want to be friends with her. And then, so Carrie's like, oh my God, I have to start dating again. And then, weirdly, her new, I don't know the character.
Seema.
This was a weird bit where Seema was like, oh, well, actually, I've already set you up an online dating platform, which I think really crossed a line in terms of a new friend. If a new friend set me up a dating profile and was catfishing people without me knowing while I'm grieving my dead husband, I would be so mad.
Yeah.
But Carrie's like, yeah, like, time to get back on the old horse.
Has a moment of being weird about it, and then Seema says, you're doing quite well, and Carrie's like, oh, okay, cool, great, love it.
Because she's a narcissist, and I can relate to that. So then she starts dating, and she swipes three times on, like, old man Tinder, I think, and finds the perfect man, which is...
Which is someone who has the word widow in their dating biography. It says, whatever his name is, say Patrick, teacher, widow.
Oh.
And she thinks, a widow?
Do you reckon they're on Tinder, or do you think they're on, like, some kind of...
Raya,
like, high profile.
Is that the elite one?
Yeah.
Sorry, I've
I don't know how the fucking right math teacher got on Raya. Like, continue.
I don't know why he's at the fundraiser later in a tuxedo, but, you know, we don't need to explore all of it.
They're all just there. It's New York.
It's New York, baby.
Everyone's at the same
event. Which is the fifth character of the series, and not written enough. Anyway,
it's actually been the fourth since they got rid of Samantha.
It goes... Carrie, Miranda, Charlotte,
New York City,
Shay.
No, New York. The presence of Samantha Jones on a smartphone.
Yes, Shay. And so Carrie goes on this date, and they sit down in this restaurant, and then she's like, I think we're going to need another drink. And what they mean by that is quite a few drinks, because her and this rich maths teacher get really, really drunk, and they exit the bar in one of my favorite kind of acting styles, which is laughing upon leaving something. And you haven't made a choice as an actor as to what you're laughing about, but it is fucking hysterical. And whenever that happens, my mind just wanders as to what event played out, but I think some sort of guffaw with a waitstaff where he said something inappropriate. And they're laughing, and then because they're old, he starts coughing.
Can I say what I think they're laughing
yes,
at?
Yes, please.
Which I think it's more like, because both of them acknowledges their first date since they've been widowed.
Yes.
And they're both quite nervous, and they order some drinks and they start loosening up. I think that there was probably some sort of gallows humor. I think that they're probably joking about their part.
Who's got this? And then she was like, big. And then they were like, oh.
Yeah, but even further, I think they've crossed the Rubicon, and they're really, you know, letting out the darkest thoughts that they've not been comfortable to share with anyone who cannot empathize with their situation. I think these are deep, guttural, like, what's the word? Cathartic laughs that they're having.
And what an amazing choice from the writers to be like, we've got our lead character here whose husband has died, and she's actually on her first date with a man whose wife has just died. And we could write that scene, but actually too hard. So we just skip to them laughing.
Well, yeah, because
it's a brave choice.
They need to include the half an hour argument between Runkle and Charlotte about whether or not she should apologize.
But that's just like, it's amazing as a writer, you can just make your job that much easier. We're like, isn't it a smarter choice not to write the scene? And you're like, I think it's an easier choice. And then they exit the bar, they're laughing, it's New York, it's nighttime. And then he starts coughing because he's old. And then he just like...
Or he could have COVID. COVID exists.
COVID exists, true. But does it make you projectile vomit all over your shoes? And then Carrie sort of sees the vomit. And because I rewatched this quite a few times, because Carrie makes it sound like she vomited first.
Thank you. I didn't know what happened, and we should have rewound it too. Because I said out loud, I said, are they both vomiting?
He vomits first. And I think Carrie has a reflex where you see someone vomit and then you vomit. But the way they vomit, you'd think they've been poisoned.
Yeah.
Like it's not like a... Because when I've vomited from drinking too much, it's like a slow tap being turned on. You know, it's...
Have you spewed from bad food before though? like a gastro thing, because that is a project, that is like your body going, this needs to exit me now. But and that's the kind of vomit was.
This is sort of a shishi alcohol poisoning vomit. It's not a slow, you know, churning guttural tap. It's more sort of like,
it's a couple of cosmopolitans. Yeah, yeah. Out they come.
Easy in, easy out.
It's an amazing moment. So good.
You loved it again today. You said, and that's when they won me over. That's what you said.
And just like that, I was hooked. And I thought it was just such a funny choice and so degrading for this, like for Sarah Jessica Parker. But I love that she was like, I'm on board. Like, I love the double spew. Like, they were just into it. Anyway, so cut to this fundraiser where Carrie's retelling this. I mean, we're all watching it being like, as a writer myself, I was like, well, there's the ending of your book. Like, 100% is your ending of your book. And then she's like, with her friends being like, oh, well, the date was a flop.
And the book's gone.
And the book's gone. Don't have an ending to the book. And we're all like, you have the best ending to your book. What are you talking about?
The date clearly wasn't a flop either. They were getting on famously. They walked out of the bar just absolutely falling over each other.
And Miranda and Charlotte are like, oh, well, maybe next time. Like, so.
Do you know?
That's where I miss Samantha.
I empathize with Miranda and Charlotte because they face the challenge of providing the right type of listening for Carrie, who is such a difficult person to have a conversation with without her being like, well, this.
You know, that's like, where Samantha was the perfect friend.
She cuts through.
Because she would have gone, so honey, you spewed on her shoes, buy him some new ones. And then like we move on, you know, and then Carrie would have got over it.
Yeah, but instead the two friends that they have are cowed by the situation.
Samantha was doing so much work for us as an audience, because instead of having that great, it's like a moment of conflict because the character of Carrie is quite tightly wound. She's taken this too seriously. She's overthought it. She's turned it into something it's not. Because there's no one to check her on that, we then have to go with her on this overthought. And so now there's like this extended bit of the episode where she's trying to avoid the guy at all costs. This is the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened. I don't get it. Me, Tim Batt, I don't understand. You had a great time. You went out for a date. You got so much in common. You spewed, you had a few drinks. Happens to the best of us.
Yeah.
You know?
It's also, you're under unique circumstance where I understand that if, you know, if it was on a date with Big, or if, you know, if you were on much more familiar terrain, you might feel as self-conscious about it as you possibly can. But you're going on your first date with a fellow widower. You overdid it. Big whoop.
Yes, you both spew. And just like, I mean, it's the best ending to a book. It's incredible. It's amazing. But instead we get, what's their gay friend called?
Anthony.
Being like, I shit my pants. That's right. I threw my pants with chocolate chippy cookies. Like, he's so.
I have nightmares about having to have a, like, somehow getting caught at a dinner party next to Anthony having.
I would love it. I would
2 hours of conversation.
Oh my God, I would love to hang out with him.
I feel tired.
As a gay man, I cannot stand him. I cannot stand him. And it's so, like, it's so gutting. It's so gutting that if the other gay man's.
Stanford.
Like that poor actor who passed away, and to be kind of his character to be so dragged through the mud in this way that he's gone and chased a TikTok star.
Insane.
Meanwhile, Big is like heroicized. I'm just like, oh my God.
I know. They couldn't have got it more wrong.
They couldn't have got it more wrong. Talk about opposites day.
Justice for Willie Garson.
No, I won't talk about opposites.
You have to.
No, I'm doing it because
it's opposite.
We're having fun. I also thought, you know, while we're sort of reflecting on the entirety of the episode, the subplot, Carrie's obviously always driving the story, but what they had around it was the nexus of Charlotte and Runkle's argument was basically everyone argues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that was the whole thing. They introduced tennis, they introduced this whole thing, and then at the end of it.
Didn't amount to much. They got embarrassed because their argument spilled onto the street very loudly, and they were caught out by. Is that Naya?
No. That is
Naya's the law professor.
That's Lisa Todd Wexley.
Lisa
and her husband Herbert Wexley.
Herbert.
Lisa and Herbert.
So this is the couple that that Charlotte is trying to impress throughout this series. This is the new friend. What does she do? Is she a lawyer as well? She's something
she's
very like
powerful. School.
Yeah, she's
a real housewife of New York. All real housewives of New York.
There's talk about her pursuing a political career later. Like she's a mover and a shaker. She's a networker. She's very powerful. She's well to do. She's lovely. by and large. And so for Charlotte to publicly explode at Harry and tell him that she's going fucking crazy,
yeah,
accidentally in front of them is devastating. So then the coda to that is at the fundraiser, they walk through a corridor looking for a toilet, and then the tables turn.
That's because right.
The friend couple are arguing.
Yeah, Herbert and Lisa are hosting the auction. Lisa's got awful mic technique and it's driving each other crazy. And Shay opens their set. They're doing a set at this fundraiser by saying, I'll use this one. Seeing as she isn't. Peals of laughter.
I mean,
it would kill after that, like, you know, auction tanking, though.
Justice for Shay.
You really don't like them, eh?
Yeah.
No.
But to be fair, they did fuel the more interesting subplot of the episode, which is Miranda's journey, which has been, Miranda's been given a very meaty season.
Yeah.
Huge.
Between the return to law school, the alcoholism,
her son fucking,
her son being a fuck machine, and the discovery of her sexuality,
her husband going deaf.
Her husband going deaf is treated...
Die with Benjamin Button disease.
Yeah. Her husband is being treated as like a comedy, sort of like a caricature. Her husband is a caricature of the Steve that we know.
No, he's got Jack disease.
He's just aging.
He's getting so old so fast.
Aging premature, yeah.
Oh, the scene where she gets Steve to finger her, and that was... Like, that was the moment I really turned on Miranda. I was like, that is so mean. It was so mean to Steve. It just felt so mean.
It was mean. It was, but she's kind of, it's wrapped in this layer of she's trying to do anything she can to sort of reinvigorate her marriage, I think, and save it.
But she's also cheating on him.
It was. Yes, do you know what, though?
Undeniably true.
It was a good, it was hard to watch, which means it was a good scene.
Yeah.
It was a really, really.
What was that movie, Marriage Story?
Marriage Story.
Marriage Story. It was like that level of awkwardness. Well, it was not quite that level of acting or writing, but it was like a well played out scene of you stay in the fucking pits of awkwardness with them after the moment the ass has fallen out of the moment. So Steve tries to finger it. It's not going well, and then we stay in the kitchen with them putting away food, and it's like, oh, get me out of this house.
My hope is that one day I come as hard as Miranda came when Shay fingered her.
Mm.
That's my hope.
I wish you that for 2022.
My hope is that Steve comes that hard. I hope that by episode 10 they put Steve in a rest home and we get to watch
someone
him.
Someone fingers his prostate.
He just goes from room to room just fucking the ever-loving daylights of whoever's on their daybed.
What if Stephen Carey
he's
got
dying
together?
Of old age next week?
Yeah,
one last big cum and then he goes.
Yeah, that's how the season should finish, with Steve having the biggest cum of his life
and
just
dying like that. Steve came and died. Came and went.
Yes.
Good Lord.
God, I love that. I wish I had the confidence of Shay doing stand-up. I think it was well not having done stand-up in a while because of the pandemic. Whenever I see Shay performing, I get really insecure because I'm like, they have so much confidence out there with no material.
Do you know what? It's very American.
Would you do?
It is very America is home to the best, like the best comedians in the world are nearly always American. And then
you're both very confident performers.
The drop off from that to like the number of bad comedians who deliver with a level of confidence and salesmanship that sort of can brainwash an audience of people into thinking they're watching comedy is staggering, and Shay represents that perfectly.
We all have confidence out there, but none of us have the confidence to walk out at a corporate gig and say, hey, I usually do about a 40-minute set, but they asked me to keep it clean, so I'm just going to do 3. You know, I just would never do 40 minutes of corporate set.
I feel like I've seen those. I roll my eyes at those comedians in real life.
I
have issues with Shay.
I'll pay you $10 to say that at your next gig.
You, this is like...
I will. The next gig we do together.
This is an internalized hatred of comedians. This is like a self-effacing phenomenon for you. Your hatred of Shay.
No,
it's pathological.
I hate Shay just as much. I'm telling you. The only way that you...
But yours isn't centered around the comedy aspect as much, I feel.
No, it's all... it is. The stand-up show was so bad. The special is the worst thing, but I wish I could see the whole thing.
And then there are these fawning characters at the thing saying, I've watched your special 10 times. And my husband said, what's happening to you?
Do you reckon Hannah Gadsby's watching it just being like, that better not be about
It is.
If that's about me, I'm going to be so fucking pissed off.
Mattress Pikelet King watched Nanette and was like, I know who needs to be.
Just texting Sarah Jessica Parker, being like, hey, that's not about me, is it?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Oh, man.
So in this season, we've been doing favorite character, least favorite character for every episode.
Got him.
Yeah, great. Then Chris, please start us off.
Favorite character, Carrie Bradshaw.
Awesome.
Always will be. I love her apartment. I love her lamps. I love her style. I love her in her widow era. I think she has just aged so beautifully. I honestly think Sarah Jessica Parker is giving an incredible performance. I think she lights up the screen. That's why we watch the series. She's so good. Least favorite character. There's an argument between Miranda's professor and her partner,
yeah,
about how they can't have a baby, and they almost run a red light and they put their foot on the brakes and a gay couple with a toddler in a pram freak out. And that gay man is my least favorite character of the entire Sex in the City franchise.
You couldn't have picked a better person, because I think that scene happened before you arrived.
So maybe
us.
I'll go next.
Yeah.
Favorite character, same guy.
No.
Yes.
That's homophobic.
No, it isn't.
It is. I literally watched that moment and was like, do they hate gay men? Do they know who watches this series?
First of all, yes. And it's so strange that Mattress Pikelet King does hate gay men. Secondly,
is that the creator of the series? Mattress Pikelet King.
Sorry, that is how we refer to a man who is also known as Michael Patrick King, who wrote most of the TV show and the two movies and a lot, but not all of the series. Okay. But I think he's been script supervising for everyone. I'm using that term wrong. I know that it's a specific thing and different to what you think, but whatever.
Show
you know,
running or whatever.
Get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So that guy, because I saw a man as a dad, as a new dad with a baby and a pram, I'm like, if I almost got hit by someone, I would want contrition from that driver.
He didn't hit.
But it was I would be so pumped up with what's it called?
Well, protect it. You'd want to protect your...
chemicals. What is it called?
Adrenaline.
Yeah, adrenaline. I'd be rapping on that window being like, what the fuck, man?
He didn't give her an opportunity to be contrite.
He sort of did. No. And they pushed back immediately.
They apologized, and then he kept yelling harder again.
It wasn't a big apology. He's my favorite character.
I love it. You boys have been getting on so well this episode.
And
you have to admit he overreacted slightly.
Yes, of course. But
there is so little representation of gay men living in New York and just like that. And we have Anthony, who runs a naked catering...
Hot fellas. Anthony, who's given like a subplot of... Anthony in this episode is like, I've got a rule, no waiters or caterers, when he talks about how there's no hotties for him to have sex with at the thing. And then like later on, this whole gag is he says... Must have happened when I got a hand job from that cater waiter in the bathroom.
Oh, what the fuck? I missed it. You're right.
We had Stanford, who ran off to manage a TikTok star.
In Japan.
And then the other gay man we had was that father.
Is that really?
It was like, I have a toddler. I have a toddler. Like, oh my, just, oh my God. No, a wasp.
Look, full disclosure, I absolutely can't remember, and I say this every episode, I can't remember who I've picked for my favourite character previously, but this time I'm going to go with Charlotte.
Your least favourite?
No, my favourite. Oh no, okay, I'm on to least favourite, yeah. Aren't I? Yeah, yeah. No, I've done my favourite. Least favourite, I'm going to go with Runkle, because he got in that awkward zone in the argument of like not putting his boundaries down enough to be like, no, you know what? You're actually in the wrong here. So he was just like in an annoying space of sort of like half-heartedly demanding an apology for a long time, making the decision to A, not get over it, which is very valid, even if you think you're right, you're in a marriage, you've got a family, sometimes you take the hit, or stand your ground. He kind of did the middle thing where it's like, I'll just keep bringing it up. It's like,
in a lighthearted way, but I seriously want an apology.
So annoying. So annoying. I detest that. It is one of my least favorite like personality traits in people. I know that some people do it like almost as part of their personality, and it annoys the hell out of me. Pick a lane. So this time, Runkle.
And you can't use anything that happens in social sport as like weapon for an argument.
This is what Charlotte said, and she's dead right.
Yeah.
She's absolutely right. Well,
do you know what,
she's
though?
Got a slightly more nuanced point in that the gender balance thing also plays into it, which I'm also, in this case, on board with for her.
Leave it on the court.
For what it's worth, I disagree with how Harry persisted asking for the apology, but you apologize. You knock someone over incidentally anywhere in the world, you apologize.
You know what's fucked up? I agree.
It's a common courtesy.
Mm-hmm. But Harry was so annoying with his pursuit that he sailed over the fact that he technically has the high ground in this.
In his initial response to it, I saw some of myself in here.
Who's your favorite and least favorite?
My favorite was Peter, Carrie's widow date.
Nice.
The maths teacher.
Yeah, really nice guy. Good
guy.
Good vibes. Like, I don't know what he said about the date afterwards, but I bet he wasn't having a fucking anxiety attack.
I'm sorry, I don't want to...
You go ahead.
It sounds like you're not going to get into this. We haven't even mentioned this. He rescues Carrie from the most embarrassing possible outcome when you put yourself forward in an auction as an item, which is, well, first no one bids on you, then they lower the price, then your friend freaks out and starts bidding against herself to show the room that you're worth something. And then he, real Prince Charming move, steps in and chucks down
$1,050. Carrie bids $1,000 on herself, which is the price of her dignity in this moment. And then he says $1,050, and
it's a lot of money.
They have a cute sort of interaction afterwards, where it's established they are going to go on the date. And
there are teachers' strikes happening in America right now. There's no way you can afford it.
He sends her a great text where he's like, looking forward to the second date with the spew emoji. And I was like, this guy seems, he's like, funny. You know, he's putting himself out there. He's in a similar situation. I've got time for him.
I appreciate it as well that no one really knew who Carrie was. At the auction, they're like, oh, I think she wrote a column like in the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, like she is a little washed up, which I appreciate.
I kept waiting for the applause when she like got mentioned or then stood up on stage. It never came.
Yeah, the thing is that I totally agree she's washed. And I feel like this book, if it is as raw as her publisher says, whose instincts I do not trust. I've met so many of these people. Who are like, it's incredible. We love it. And I'm like, oh, you do not.
You don't like the cover?
You're just like, oh my God.
Show you the worst like graphic design in the book. She's like, I love number 5. Fucking hell. But if it is as raw as that woman says it is, then I think this book could be a really, like, you know, I think Carrie's capable of writing one last great thing. And if she's as honest and open about her grief, even though she's instinctual, like, you know, it was a part of her problem in the podcast was she couldn't open up. She was squeamish when she was asked if she masturbates. Then she was on painkillers and she was a phenomenal guest for one episode only. Anyway, that's all by the by. My least favorite is the... it's the guy who runs the squash and the tomato stall at the market. It looked like a part of a new square.
Yeah, okay.
Anyone who confuses Steve like that by relocating their stall week to week, him and the pickle guy.
Yeah.
Whoever is in charge of allocating where the stalls go at the market.
I love that it hasn't even occurred to you that Steve's just gotten a bit mixed
up. They're fucking around with him.
It's like
the fifth character is fucking around.
This is what the favorite this is what the Stasi agents did. This is like you subtly change piece of information.
Break into someone's house, yeah. Move the books, take nothing.
Exactly.
Let them know you've been there.
It's stuff that if you say it out loud to anyone else, you sound crazy.
I think we're gonna get such an amazing episode from Steve next week.
If they fucking let him.
They will. They have to.
They didn't even have him in the last episode, so I was happy to see him.
They literally have no respect left for Steve.
They don't.
Do you know who another piece of collateral damage in this like home life overhaul is going to be? Brady. Yeah. I feel like he's just got himself back on the rails.
Yeah.
He's going to I don't know what it's going to be.
It's going to ruin his sex
Previously,
life.
He's done it with rats. Yeah, I don't know.
He's going to see. He's going to walk in on Miranda. And Shay fucking. And that's why.
You're right. That
Miranda's going to have to confess to Steve.
That's where this is leading. You're absolutely right.
And then that's
going
to ruin his sex life because Brady's fucking like a king. And now all he's going to think about is fucking his mum.
I think he's so evolved. Like, that's how they've set him up now that he'll be untouched.
He's a spunk lord.
They're running out of road. They've got a few things to address. And there's only, three episodes left?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, predictions?
I was just thinking then. I gasped when you were talking because it suddenly occurred to me, are we going to get an Oprah cameo? But no.
No,
she wouldn't lower herself. Oprah wouldn't lower herself to running for president. I don't think she's going to lower herself to
coming I feel
on
like
this.
They're squaring themselves up for a second season. Carrie dates Peter, realizes that it's, she's ready to move on, but not with him.
Agreed.
So I think she ends the episode on a positive note. Her book's been published. She's ready to put herself back out in the world. Charlotte accepts Rock.
Mm-hmm.
She learns to accept, change.
They go shopping. They buy pants.
They buy cargo, they buy cargo yes. pants and one of those
Docks.
Skatey belts. Yeah, fantastic. Miranda leaves Steve.
Yes.
But Shay does, leaves Steve for Shay, but Shay says, you've misunderstood this. That's not what I asked of you. That's not what I want.
I think they will ultimately villainize Shay for us.
Yeah, even in that, they've kind of broken up a marriage, needlessly in some ways, there's not a relationship coming out of that fire.
And then I guess Nia gets pregnant. The law professor.
No. Oh, sorry. This is your thing.
Naya.
Oh, yes.
I think she'll foster.
Anyway, these are my speculations. I don't know.
Yeah.
But there's not a lot of time left, and I feel like they've got enough stories on the go that they're like...
You're too bound to real-world thinking where gravity exists, time flows linearly. Like, this show really messes around with the concept of time. Anything is possible. I'm so excited about... Even just the amount of passage of time that could happen in the next three episodes. We could be looking at 4-year arcs in the last three episodes. Who knows?
Anything could happen, which is incredible.
Yeah.
Anything could happen. The writing,
exciting.
They're taking such big
swoops. We saw Cynthia Nixon's bare breasts in this show, which we've seen in, I think, the Sex and the City show. But, first of all, and this sounds a little, trite, but genuinely... That is an amazingly brave thing to do in Hollywood when you are past 50.
Mm.
Secondly, her skin is amazing.
Mm.
Sorry to be creepy,
what's her secret?
Yeah.
But anything is possible in
this
show. You'd
have great skin too if you were fucking like a goddess. I really wish Samantha was around.
The fact that we know Samantha's not coming back really fills me with sadness because, imagine just...
Do we know she's not coming back?
Oh, God, it would be the greatest bait and switch of all time if they'd engineered this social media beef, this PR disaster.
The final frame after we see Steve come and go is it's a screenshot text to Carrie on her phone, and it's a London to New York flight.
Oh my God, yes.
We just see Samantha. Her heels step off the plane. Yeah. What would be honestly incredible is if there was a new season that was just Samantha in London.
Please. I think she would do it.
I would love it.
Because what I understand to be her reasons for doing this.
Fucking a whole bunch of English men.
She didn't want to be an accessory for Carrie's shit journey again for the umpteenth time. Give me that spinoff.
Oh, so good, right?
It'd be fantastic. Okay. Yes, that's us.
So another perfect episode to another perfect season.
Yeah,
I think so.
That's right. Both of the show and the podcast.
And the podcast.
Chris, it's been a delight to have you on the show. Is there anything that you're doing in the real world that exists outside of Sex and the City and outside of the worst idea of all time that people might be interested in?
I'm doing, I'm doing the Melbourne International Comedy Festival if you're in Melbourne. I'm going to go to Sydney and do the Sydney Comedy Festival if you're in Sydney. And I'm touring the country at the moment.
What country?
This country, Aotearoa, New Zealand, with a comedy show as well. I'm going around a whole bunch of places. It's very like one of my favorite stand-up comedians, Shay. I don't know if you've seen their work. It's sort of very cutting-edge social commentary, more sort of empowerment festival. Yeah. And you will all be standing for the duration of the concert.
Fantastic. And if people wanted to seek that out, how would they do it?
You can actually go to my personal website, chrisparkercomedy.com, or just go to my Instagram, chrisparker11.
The 10 Chris Parkers to kill before you can finally sleep easy.
The links are in the show notes to this episode. And if this episode wasn't testament enough to Chris's comedy talents, he's literally won the greatest comedy award that we give out in New Zealand. So if you're in New Zealand, you already know who he is. But if you're in Australia and for some reason you don't
know,
out
of the box award.
You got to go.
It makes you think.
He is a challenging comedian. I'm actually also, brave. I'm also going to be in Melbourne. Chris and I are going to live together. So we haven't found out where yet, but when we find the address, we'll be dropping there.
Guy Montgomery, take him or leave him, you know? Like if you've got a free night, if something opens up.
Have you watched any of Sex and the City, the TV show? Or have you refused?
Only Odds and Ends as a boy. Not a whole episode, not a whole season.
As a man.
Well, I'm going to turn you into a man.
Are we going to watch it?
God, yeah, I'm watching it at the moment. I like just to have it on, especially when I'm hungover.
All right, well, please bring some microphones so we can get that online. Thanks very much, Chris. Been a pleasure having you on.
The pleasure is all mine. And honey, I'll be pleasuring myself all night long.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.